Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life.
Hello, friends. Today, I'm excited to be discussing part two of how movement can be used as a tool for healing and emotional stability when it comes to stress and trauma. If you haven't had a chance to listen to part one, I really recommend that you pause this episode, jump back and listen to the last one, and then resume this episode because the part one really does lay a solid foundation of what I'm going to be sharing today. I wanted to take a moment just to catch you up on a few things that are happening in the thriving birth worker community. The first one is a dear friend of mine and colleague, Shauna, are going to be hosting our second Self-Care for Birth Workers workshop this March 21st from 4 to 6 p.m. So if you are in the Portland area, it's a two-hour workshop focused on you, the birth worker, and your specific needs. You can expect to develop a deeper understanding in how your movement supports the body, learning new movements to integrate into your practice, practical and applicable tools for you and your clients, nervous system downregulation practices, and community connection, and of course, there's going to be healthy snacks. If you're local to the area, I really encourage you to check it out. We are totally understanding of the on-call life, so if you happen to not be able to attend last minute due to a birth, you'll receive a full refund, or we can just transfer your registration to our next workshop, as we are hosting these events quarterly. Also, on the podcast front, I'd like to start hosting a mailbag segment every now and then, which meaning I'd like to invite all of you to send questions related to movement, self-care, pelvic floor, core function, basically all things movement and body and how it impacts our ability to serve. I can then answer these questions on the podcast because I can guarantee if you have a question, many others are wondering the exact same thing. I think this will be a fun addition to the show. So if you have any questions, please email me at erinunderwoodmovement@gmail.com, or you can message me through social media at Thriving Birth Worker. So talking about stress and trauma and a toolbox. So I want to start out this episode that my passion is that everyone know their options that they have available to them. So just like birth in all things life, everyone should have options and everyone should have choices. So I don't think there is any one right way to process trauma and stress. I don't think there's any one right way for anyone to birth. But I do believe that the right thing is that everyone knows that they have these options available to them so that they can then decide what choices make the most sense for them. And so what I have found when we talk about stress and trauma and laying out different tools that are available to us to serve us, that movement is really often left out of the equation. So that is why I love highlighting it as something that is an option that we can utilize, because many people don't realize an option. They don't really understand how it can be utilized. It's not something that's modeled very well. And so that's why I'm really focusing on this and talking about it in this episode. But in no way am I trying to elevate it as a more important tool than anything else. In no way am I saying that movement is the one thing that you need to heal in any area of your body or in your life, because we are complex beings and almost everything in our lives that we want to move towards more health, wholeness, and healing in really usually requires a pretty holistic approach. And so that is always what I'm going to be championing, is that holistic approach. So that is just what I wanted to start this episode with, is no way am I saying that this is the one thing that anyone needs to do to move into wholeness and health. So when we talk about moving into looking at our options for our toolbox, for our healing and for our health and for our wholeness and what works to support ourselves, there are a few mindset and perspective shifts that I think are really important to address first and foremost before we even move into the actual tools themselves. So trauma and secondary trauma, they're real things, especially in the birth community. So there are times where you can walk away from an experience that maybe wasn't even your own and you were just witnessing it. And one, understanding that neurologically, we are all wired very differently. And so how the brain and the body might interpret an experience, one person might experience it as trauma and one person might experience it as just normal and fine. And so, and I think we've seen a lot of this in our own clients where we have to be really careful not to place ideas in people's heads because we have, I think most of us have seen where someone will experience something and from the outside looking in, it looks really traumatic. It looks like it was really scary or big and that it could very well shake them up. And the clients respond very calmly and they really seem fine and they feel solid and they felt really unrattled by the whole situation. And so as practitioners, we've all learned, I think, that we can't put our story on top of someone else's story and we have to be careful not to place ideas in people's heads of, oh, wow, that was traumatic. Are you okay? All of a sudden, the client starts asking themselves questions that they might not have been asking initially. And I think on the flip side, we've all seen things where the birth seemed to go very normal and just the way it should progress. And some small step in that process that didn't raise any red flags for anyone else could really get the client feeling really stuck inside and feeling really triggered or traumatized. And so we, one, have to, I like talking about it externally initially, because when we talk about seeing these things in other people, it's a lot easier to identify. And then we can slow down and ask ourselves the same questions that we would love to help hold our clients' hands through and walk them through. So one, understanding that trauma and secondary trauma affect each of us differently, and we can't label things. This is what goes in the trauma column, and this what doesn't go in the trauma column. It is very individual because we all have our own histories. We all have our neurological and biological wiring. And so we have to just embrace a little bit of this is how my body responds. This is how my brain processed it and not overanalyze. But that wasn't even traumatic. If your body and your nervous system experienced it as trauma, I would just encourage you to just embrace that first step. It doesn't mean you're broken. It doesn't mean you're weird. But to me, for my own personal healing journey, allowing myself to acknowledge that something felt traumatic was a very good step for me to say that my body, my nervous system, my mind, I experienced that as trauma rather than overanalyzing it and saying, wait a minute, like, but no, rationalizing my way out of, but that shouldn't have been scary or that shouldn't have triggered me. And to me, it's, you don't really need to argue with your brain and your body. If your body is sending you signals, just know that your body is really smart and really trying to be on your side. And so if your body is sending you signals, it's a really cool thing just to slow down and acknowledge, like, okay, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. The other mentality shift that is really important to address and to acknowledge in our own approach, especially in ourselves, is that suck it up mentality. As far as what I was saying earlier of really labeling things of this shouldn't bother me. The category of this shouldn't bother me is that can be a really, I don't want to say dangerous, but it can be a tightrope, a walk to approach life where an external list or external shoulds or shouldn'ts, when we try and take that list and dictate how our body responds, just knowing that the body doesn't often listen to those lists and it doesn't believe those lists and the body doesn't lie. The body is very intuitive and will communicate what's going on. And so when we can learn to honor what our body is saying over sometimes what our brain is saying, then we can start just releasing ourselves from having to check in with external lists or shoulds or shouldn'ts to validate what our body is saying. And when our body is communicating something through anxiety, through anything, like I'm not here to tell you what your trigger response should or shouldn't be. And I know trigger is an interesting word, but it can lead to different people believe different things about that word. But I mean it in a way as far as when your body responds in a strong negative way and you just acknowledge it and say, okay, I hear you. This is what's going on. So everyone deserves a toolbox is where I'm coming from. Like you deserve to have a large list of tools that are available to you that you know work for you, for your personality, and that you can follow your intuition and know that this tool will serve you in this moment. And I think that process comes through a little bit of trial and error. We all need to get to know ourselves. And when we are in that space of our body is speaking to us through the nervous system, through the mind, through our heart rate, through press, you know, we're sweating, we have headaches, we have tension, we are carrying something in our body. And rather than trying to stuff it or just make the headache go away or whatever the way that our nervous system is talking to us, however that is manifesting, we can lean into that and just be more curious, and then we can try different things. And I think there's this idea. So I want to talk about this. Not allowing a symptom that resurfaces to feel like regression. Because a lot of times we think of healing and this continuum and on this timeline. And so I want to use a couple of specific examples because I think that's the most helpful. So a very physical example and a very real example for me is I have been on a journey healing my pelvic floor. So I have had uterine and rectocele prolapse. And so initially it manifested in, you know, a lot of heaviness. It felt like I was sitting on a tennis ball, like there was a large tampon that was falling out of me. I would leak even without pressure. So even without the jumping or the running or whatever, I would just leak. And I went on this journey to find physical healing, and I was able to. And this may be a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, I got a really bad cold with a cough, and it lasted forever. Like, I think it lasted 3 weeks. It was miserable. It was one of those things that just hung on forever. And so after, you know, probably halfway into this cold, I feel like I am back at the beginning with my prolapse issues. Like, I am leaking. I am heavy. I am just miserable. And so the way my emotions responded, where I was terrified, I was like, I am back where I started. I've lost all this ground that I've gained. I have done this work for years to heal my pelvic floor. And all of a sudden it's all gone. And like the narrative, I did not go into the most healthy place mentally. And so I felt a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress around this. And so, I still like another week and a half of being sick in this process of just coughing and all that pressure on my pelvic floor. And plus I'm miserable and sick. And so like, I'm not exercising. I'm not doing anything except for trying to heal. And at the end of those 3 weeks, when I was able to heal my cold, my pelvic floor was still like, oh, it just felt broken. And I had to slow down and to catch my thoughts, because the word broken or the idea of regression or that I was back at the beginning, I realized that I saw my healing on this timeline and I felt like I had jumped back to the beginning. And when I slowed down, I was like, wait a minute, no, my body, I have all these tools that I have worked through. And it took me years to dial in what I know works for my body on healing and strengthening and communicating with my pelvic floor. And I was able to catch myself, calm myself down and say, I know what I need to do. And so I did my process. I did the protocol that I know works for my body. Personally, for me, I have done the Restore Your Core program by Lauren Ohan. And so I just went back and I was like, I'm going to work through the program. And within 3 weeks, I was back to feeling totally strong and capable and able to jump around or do whatever I needed to. And my pelvic floor did not feel heavy anymore. And that was a really important lesson for me that I know a lot of people, we do this timeline of feeling like we can make progress. And then we feel like if something happens that reminds us of where we were at last year, last month, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, we immediately put ourselves back on that point in time in the timeline. And then we imagine that we have, okay, great, now I have 10 more years to get back to that space. And really saying, no, this is a very different part in my timeline, in my story. And I do have all these tools that some I know work. I've spent a lot of time figuring it out in my body, and I know what doesn't work. And I might not fully know everything that works, but I'm way farther along on my healing journey and kind of coaching ourselves through that. So that's the physical portion for me. But also, I have struggled with anxiety and depression, and that anxiety majorly manifests in my life. Even, you know, anxiety attacks, like the whole shebang, like I have felt it all. And when I get when I experience something in my body that reminds me of, again, probably 10, 15 years ago, it is that physical story that I have in my mind now of my pelvic floor. It's easier for me to apply a physical story to what's going on internally because I can't name the muscle that causes my anxiety. I can't pull out a diagram I'm not a neuroscientist. I love studying it and I know some about it, but I definitely am not able to pinpoint like this hormone I know is spiking at this moment. And so when I go back to what I know, which is the pelvic floor, and then that experience, it was very encouraging to me to just take a breath and not let my story go to a really deep, dark place, that I really stayed with the facts. Because I think when we are on that healing journey, whatever it is, however it manifests for you, that it is very easy to attach meaning to facts. And we have to slow down and ask ourselves, again, going back to referring back to the episode I did on the one practice that you can do to thrive, which dives really deep into the idea of asking ourselves questions and helping us understand if something is true, if it's really true, and really differentiating between truth and a story we're telling ourselves. And I love, that's a phrase that I picked up from Brené Brown. And I really love that because it doesn't say, oh, I'm just doing something so wrong and so bad and so evil and shaming ourselves, but it's just acknowledging like this is a story I'm telling myself. I don't know that it's true. I don't know any of it. I just know that it's, and then I can slow down and say, okay, that's just a story. And what is true? The truth is my pelvic floor is weak, or I'm experiencing anxiety, or any of that. But that doesn't mean that, okay, now I'm stuck here for the, you know, next 3 years or any of that. So moving into the body and how all of this connects. So when we talk about trauma, when we talk about stress and anxiety, what I have found is the conversation revolves very much on the mind. It talks about our feelings and how we express them. We get into a lot of psychology. We can get into some of the hormones, but I often find that we don't take that last step into talking about how our physical body is connected to all of that, because we are one being, and our mind and our emotions and our hormones, everything in the body, it's all connected. So I love the example of if you choose to put a smile on your face, I think it's 30 seconds to a minute. And if you want to try this with me now, and it's okay if you look silly if you're driving down the road, but if you would just for the next 30 seconds, choose to put a smile on your face. You don't have to think about anything. You don't have to think thoughts of gratitude. You don't have to do any of that. We're just putting a smile on our face as big as, you know, you can. It can be really corny. It doesn't have to be genuine. Just putting that smile on your face. If you do it for 30 seconds to a minute, your hormones will start to shift. your hormones will respond to the physical movement of your face. And after your hormones shift, then your emotions will shift. And so this is, I love that example of just feeling how you physically changed something of your body, the shape of it, shifted and impacted your emotions, your hormones, and then your emotions. And we also can talk about if you give someone a hug that you trust, who is like a safe person for you, and you can just hold each other for about a minute. Your hearts, all of our hearts give off this electromagnetic field, and they will start communicating with each other. It's a really powerful thing. If you're interested in going down that road at all, it's HeartMath Institute does a lot of really interesting research, and I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole today, but it's fascinating and I love it. But that is two examples of how our physical bodies interact with our hormones and our emotions, and that we aren't nearly as separate of a being as we like to pretend that we are. So there's this idea that trauma can be stored in the body, in fascial and connective tissue. So it's really very common for anyone who does touch, any kind of touch therapy, so massage therapists especially, if they are working on a client. And the client will have a very strong emotional reaction sometimes to a specific area being worked on. And it's very, very, very common. And it's basically, I would say that this is very widely accepted, that the idea of emotions and trauma being held in the body. And that's something that also can be very new to some people. So I was reading this is just my world. And so sometimes I forget when you're in your world, like, especially as birth workers too, like you just sometimes start talking about something that all of us know that are in the birth world, and your neighbor is just looking at you like, what are you even talking about? You're like, oh wait, not everyone speaks this language. And it's the same thing with movement. And I saw a post of a woman talking about how she held trauma in her hips. And a lot of people were like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, wait, why would you explain that? And she did a really good job of explaining it. And that's where I want to go a little bit today, is that one, that could be a very new idea to you, or it may not be. And neither one is good or bad, but just one, starting that dialogue with your own body of, if I carry tension or trauma in my own body, I'm wondering where that would be. And you don't have to know the answer at all, but some of us do. Some of us know we clench our jaws or our neck and shoulders, or the belly is always really tense and tight. I will get knots in my stomach. If I'm experiencing anxiety, I will have a strong, let's put this nicely, a strong digestive reaction. When I have intense anxiety, I will sweat. Okay, here is a little bit personal stuff, but you know, we can go there. I have really bad BO, body odor, when I get anxiety. Like my hormones just they get stressed out with me. And then it comes out through my sweat glands. And then I don't have body odor normally, except when I have a lot of anxiety and stress in my life. And so we can notice these things of ways that our body responds. And again, it's not good or bad. It's just noticing and paying attention and saying, okay, I see that. Like that's how my body responds. So there's another mindset process that we can think about as far as this idea of questioning what it means to be quote unquote in control of your body. So I am a huge fan of empowerment and autonomy and you having freedom of choice for feeling safe and secure and being able to dictate what that means. But we can almost take this idea of being in control really to a point where we don't trust our own body. Like we want the mind to dictate what our own body should or shouldn't do, rather than allowing our body to have a voice in the conversation. And so I'm going to get into an example of if you are experiencing anxiety, let's just pick anxiety because I'm familiar with this one, and you want to, your body feels like it needs to shake. Like it's if you have an anxiety attack or if you're having just a lot of nervous energy in your body and you feel shaky. Sometimes our mind can dictate that that is not a healthy response, that it is quote unquote not in control. If the mind doesn't feel like it's in control, then it feels a little bit scary and a little bit nerve wracking. And so we can shift into the mind being a stronger voice in our healing process or how we allow our body to respond than the actual body. And so I am a huge proponent of living an embodied life, which means for me, allowing the body to have a voice at the table and to be able to communicate its needs and to validate those needs. And we're going to get into a few specific examples here. So here's the specific example. We're going to keep building off of the idea of the body a lot of times wanting to respond with shaking and the mind not quite knowing what to do with that. And so there's this, if you ever see a nature show where one animal like attacks a gazelle or, you know, like a alligator attacks a gazelle, and the gazelle is able to escape, but like barely, like it struggled because it was like right there. It was right in the crocodile's grip. A lot of the times, if you see an animal go through something traumatic, you will see it shake, like it kind of shakes it off. And this is a very common way for other mammals, maybe not mammals too, but I've only seen it with mammals, and to respond to stress and anxiety. And they process it physiologically because, you know, these animals don't have all the tools that we have. They don't go to an animal therapist and talk their feelings out, which is beautiful. And I'm not downplaying that at all. And again, that is a tool that should be in your toolbox and available to you if you feel that would serve you. And maybe you need to try it to know whether or not it serves you. But again, we a lot of times take the physical tools off of the table. And so the shaking is a very common way for other animals to process physiologically their feelings. So if we are body and emotion and hormones all mixed into one, and everything influences each other, just like I talked about in the last episode, then when something happens that triggers something in our hormones, in our emotions, then the body, a lot of times it is helpful if the body is part of the healing process. And sometimes what happens to our bodies can then reverse influence our hormones, which then influence our emotions. It can go back and forth. So one of the tools that I like to use is called neurogenic shaking, which I'm going to reference some resources, some books, if you're interested in going deeper into any of these things. But basically neurogenic shaking, if you want to Google trauma release exercise, is they have some really good tutorials on YouTube. It's basically tapping into that natural response where the body can shake, and kind of very similar to like shivering, I would say, but through the whole body, especially the pelvis and the core, being able to, and the legs for me, I really feel it a lot in my legs, to be able to physiologically process hormones and emotions without, you don't have to think about anything. You don't have to, I mean, sometimes specific instances can come up, but sometimes it's just a physical process of you shake and then you're done. And you don't have to mentally wrestle things out. It is a very physical tool. So again, it's not elevating that above anything else. So the other element that I like to look at a lot of times is I look at the psoas. The psoas is a muscle. It connects right underneath the rib cage on either side of the spine. It's got 11 attachment points on each side, wraps around and through the pelvis and attaches at the top of each femur. And it's a big, big muscle. It's powerful. And a lot of times it's referred to as a fight or flight muscle. We can carry a lot of tension, trauma, and emotions there. And if you were to imagine, that would be the muscle that would pull you into the fetal position. It would be a big player in that positioning. And so if we can incorporate, I teach a couple of psoas releases, which I will link in the show notes here, to practice, where, again, it's a very physical move. It is a very relaxing move. You don't even really feel anything because of the way the position, the psoas is positioned. It's not the easiest to access through massage, and it's not the easiest to get into a position where you can like stretch it, like a hamstring or something like that. So we can position ourselves where we can allow gravity to help lengthen that muscle, but we really are just in a resting position. And it can be a very powerful way to, again, physically help support our bodies without having to really rely as heavily on the hormonal or the emotional side of things. Another physical tool. So general movement as well. So for me, when I am experiencing that anxiety building off of the psoas piece, I do feel that strong push to go into the fetal position and to not move. It is a very strong desire for me to, again, curl up into a ball and to not move, especially with anxiety or my depression. And so that is where I get to build off of my relationship with myself and know deep down what I need in the moment. Because sometimes I do need to rest. I need to do nothing. I need to veg out. And I need to binge on Netflix, and that's what I need to do for the day. But when that day turns into a week, turns into a month, I know that that is not serving me. That the question I just like to ask myself is, how will I feel tomorrow if this is how I spend my time right now? And a lot of times, physiologically, I know I'm going to feel really achy, and I'm going to feel really cranky in my lower back, and I'm going to feel a lot of tension in my neck and shoulders if I'm just laying around a bed all day, which, I mean, again, who has time to lay around in bed all day? But when we do have that little bit of time and we choose to, you know, if I have a day off or just as soon as after dinner, I'm crawling into bed and just saying, hey, kids, let's just watch a movie and not moving. I know that my body will not feel the best if I do that a lot. So that's where I get to make my choices of what's going to serve me. So it's just knowing yourself, looking at the tools that are available to you and saying, what am I going to choose today? And it's not saying that one thing is right for every single time. Some days I don't need to take a 10-mile walk. Like, that's not going to serve me, and it's going to serve me emotionally or physically. And some days there is so much energy inside of me where I know if I don't move and get it out of me, that it will just continue to build. The other really cool thing about movement is interoception and proprioception and balance and all these really cool practices that I integrate into my own classes and into my own programs. They have been shown to lower anxiety. So when you create a mindfulness around how you're carrying your body and around being intentional about how you move and really breaking out of your normal routine and allowing yourself to question, like, wait, where is my pelvis at? I mean, what would this movement feel like if I tried it with a neutral pelvis or with stabilizing the spine or without hiking my right hip up or without elevating my rib cage? All these little cues that if you've taken a class with me, you will recognize. And if you haven't, I'll point you over to my YouTube channel and you can try a few. Then you can then, through that process of tapping into your physical body, it has been statistically shown that you can lower your anxiety through that process. So I love this fact that we can access our emotions and our hormones through physical movement. It's very, very powerful. Another process you might want to look into. I am not a teacher of it, and so I'm not a professional, but I know a lot of people who have found some really good relief with it is the idea of tapping. So tapping is a combination of using rhythmic patterns, which our nervous system finds very soothing, and touching pressure points, very similar to what you would use in acupressure or acupuncture. And so if you are interested in that, you could Google that as being a possible tool to use in your toolbox. And the last practice that is very accessible to you at all times that I love is balance. So one, how often do we balance for fun as adults? I mean, if you think of kids, kids are always playing silly little games or, oh, what can I stand on one leg? What would happen if I stood on one leg with my eyes closed? And they just come up with little challenges for themselves. And yet when we become adults, balance becomes something that we don't do very often until all of a sudden we realize that we can't. And so what it is very, balance is a very powerful tool. One, it develops a lot of strength and it brings us into our body fully, because even when we are exercising, we do rely a lot on our vision. And so when we take vision out of it, when you add balance with your eyes closed, which you don't have to start with your eyes closed, but when you, especially when you take your eyes out of the equation, then you are fully relying on what you're feeling in your own skin to make adjustments. And so to balance in non-threatening situations, so doing it next to a wall, next to a chair, near something that's soft, like you can just immediately put your other foot down. You can immediately open your eyes. Like, you're not going to put yourself in a threatening situation and then hope that it helps your nervous system calm down. But if you can add balance just for fun for a couple of minutes, you know, practice just standing on one foot and see how long you can do it. And then when that becomes something that doesn't feel very challenging, I love to, you're right next to a chair, you're right next to a wall. What happens if you try and close your eyes? And what happens if you take two little Jenga blocks or two, you know, kind of toys that aren't going to be too heavy, and you try and move through a couple of your favorite exercises, a lunge, or you reach for something, but you try and keep those two toys balanced. All of a sudden, you are 100% in this moment and you are focused on the task at hand, and your body and your emotions and your hormones are all in sync to get this one task done. And be the practice of being present is, sometimes meditation is a really powerful practice, and sometimes it just, it feels like that's not going to be the most easy gateway to get into, because your brain, if your body and your brain, everything is so swirling and so busy, and all you do if you sit down when you try and meditate is just feel bad about how you can't meditate, then I love the idea of it maybe moving into a movement meditation where we're adding movement into the equation to help the process of getting everything in sync into this moment right here, right now. Because a lot of anxiety and worry are connected to what happened in the past or what may happen in the future. And when we're right here in this moment, things become a lot calmer and a lot simpler. So if that is, that's another really powerful practice that is very simple and accessible to anyone. So this is why I have so many of these elements in my Thriving Birthworker Movement Method course that I'll be releasing next month. So this whole podcast is not building up to some ad, and I don't talk about things that I'm not excited about or I don't believe in. And this course is just fabulous. And I have put years of research and just a lot of work. And I really fully do believe in this course. I've designed it to build not only the strength of your back and your upper body and your core, but it all ties back to this deeper relationship with your body and a more accurate dialogue between your body parts and understanding what your body needs right now. And it's just, it's a beautiful process, and it's much different than simply doing a few exercise classes. So if you would like to be in the loop on the first launch of my course. I will link it in the show notes so you can get on the waitlist. And if you get on the waitlist, you'll get access to any special bonuses or sale prices. Wink, wink, nod, nod. So in the show notes, I'm also going to include some other outside resources and amazing folks that I follow who teach this embodied movement work. A few books that I found really helpful is, if you're interested in understanding fascia a little bit more, which is also connected to our emotions, but it's connected to movement, Tom Meyer's Anatomy Trains is a very powerful book that digs into this topic. When you're thinking about the body and trauma, a few books that I really like is Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers by Robert Skopulski. There's another book called Waking the Tiger. It's an oldie but a goodie. And there's also The Revolutionary Trauma Release Process by David Berselli. And if you're just looking into moving the body in a bigger picture way, Move Your DNA by Katie Bowman is a really good place to start. So again, I love expanding our toolbox. I love knowing that in this moment, slowing down and saying, what tools do I have available to serve myself, to nurture myself, to take care of myself? And movement is one tool that I believe everyone should have access to. And I do believe because it hasn't been talked about, it's just very easy to leave it out of the equation or to not even think about it. And so I love to have this opportunity to chat with you about options where movement could serve you, could serve your emotions, could serve your hormones in a really powerful way that you can just practice integrating. And any of these tools that don't ring true for you, you just don't worry about it and you leave it aside. It's all about having options and knowing that you have the ability to choose what would serve you in this moment. I deeply appreciate you, your strength, and your willingness to do the hard work of showing up for your clients and for yourself. Embodied work leads into a full and powerful life, and I am over here cheering you on as you move into your version of thriving. Bye for now. The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.